Welcome to New World Notes. I am Kenneth Doust. Today we'll take a look at the psychology of consumerism. The corporate marketing departments understand pretty well what can make us keep buying stuff. Shouldn't we understand this too? After all, as somebody said, getting and spending, we lay waste our powers. Somebody said that in the year 1807, and 2 centuries later, he's still right. I hope you'll stay tuned. Today, we'll take another look at a subject we've explored before, and that is the trap of consumerism and overconsumption. This may seem an odd topic to focus on these days. A much more pressing problem is the opposite of overconsumption, and that is poverty. Poverty is increasing, and unemployment, and homelessness, and hunger. So some middle-class nitwit bought a fancier car than he needed. So somebody you know owns 30 pairs of shoes and just bought another. Isn't a bigger problem that too many people can't afford any new shoes? I don't have a perfect answer to that question. Here's a partial answer. Poverty and overconsumption are flip sides of the same coin. The same economic system that is urging us to buy more and more stuff, the same system that urges us to look for acceptance and happiness in acquiring consumer goods, this is the same system that has been doing everything it can to create poverty, to pay workers less and less, to downsize the workforce, to close the factories in the U.S., to destroy the labor unions, to funnel all of the profits of an enterprise up to the very top, to the owners and the uppermost top executives. Two parts of the same system. And here's another partial answer. Overconsumption of short-lived, shoddy consumer goods is wrecking the planet. And our consumption binge is not making us feel happy or satisfied. We're miserable. By far, Americans lead the world in per capita consumption of prescription antidepressant drugs. And we'd be taking even more of them than we are if more Americans could afford the psychiatric care we need. Anyway, today we have an interesting presentation on the subject. It's part of a documentary film called Consumed: Inside the Belly of the Beast. The film looks at consumerism from the perspective of evolutionary psychology. I'll admit that I don't really think evolutionary psychology is a real science. Psychology is a science, definitely. Evolutionary biology, definitely. Evolutionary psychology? A big problem here is that we have no evidence about human psychology in the prehistorical past. But let's not get into that. On the plus side, these evolutionary psychologists are real psychologists. And when they talk about the psychology of the consumer culture, they have some good insights to offer. The speakers we'll hear talk about how the marketers exploit certain psychological tendencies in people to sell products. I think the speakers are especially interesting when they talk about our display of our products in the competition for mates and in the competition for social status. In the past, display of certain desirable traits would attract mates. Physical strength, for example, or the ability to sing well. Now, to attract mates, one tries to buy and display above-average products to compensate for below-average traits. This strategy doesn't work well in the long term, but in the short term, it's perfect for selling lots of products. On to the movie.
I delivered the message. Now what?
Now let's check the second message.
Ready.
Mum, the doctor's deodorant discovery now contains M3 to stop odor 24 hours a day. Remember now.
I know. For security reasons, Mum's the word.
The Perhaps the most incredible story of the last million years is the rise of modern human culture. But after a century of exponential growth in population and consumerism, people are questioning the nature of modern life. This film uses evolutionary psychology as a tool to look at modern society.
We've all got this weird mental illness called consumerism. We've all kind of gone collectively psychotic. Chasing status in public with people who don't really care and neglecting your own lovers and friends and neighbors and kids.
You know, that this consumption of material items as a means to acquire status is as much of a trap as it is a set of freedoms. Just pervasive nature of it is perhaps crossed a threshold of us being able to cope with it and process the information. The high street is actually a stressful, anxious place. We're getting very little from it, but working incredibly hard to try and figure it all out.
Our grandchildren will think, what were they on about? Why did they care about brands and having six-bedroom houses if they're only one married couple and one kid? Why did they care about that?
There is a lot of baggage and meaning attached to the word consumer and consumerism. But for all the negative connotations, consumerism and consumptive processes are merely descriptive words for something that feels very normal for the human animal to do.
They're the result of a very natural human urge to experience and to grow and to learn and to play out dreams and ambitions and aspirations. And in that respect, consumption can be seen as something incredibly natural and incredibly normal for a stimulus-hungry species such as ours to do.
I just wish I had a decent kitchen.
In a subtle and satisfying way, this consumption of products and experiences has now also become a significant measure for our lives. Growth has become fetishized, but more money, more holidays, more work, more choice, more stuff in more houses is pushing us to the limit. Addictions, depression, and mental health issues are becoming part of everyday conversation. We are losing ourselves in the rush, struggling to keep our head above water. There's not just the individual financial and psychological cost of modern culture. There is also an environmental cost. And in a rigorous study, behavioural scientist Warren Hearn found the human race is acting like a cancer on the planet, displaying all the four major characteristics of a malignant process. Ultimately, cancer kills the organism that supports it.
I think it's become increasingly clear that the kind of growth rates that we're getting around the world, 10% plus in countries like China and India, a norm of 2 or 3% in most industrialised countries, can't be sustained. The sheer throughput of materials, energy, resources that are finite, most of them, that cannot continue into the long term.
Evolutionary theory says we have built in our genes two prime subconscious motivators, survival and attracting a mate. The principal tool humans use to fulfill both of these needs is the brain. Our brain has tripled in size since we evolved from primates. It is what makes us unique as animals, and research suggests if we understand the mechanisms of the brain, we begin to understand our whole culture. Consumerist or otherwise.
Most animals run around worrying about three things: food, predators, and grooming themselves to get rid of parasites and infectious disease. Once we've taken care of that, once we have agriculture to produce food, once we've shot and killed all the predators around us, and once we've got sanitation and medicine to take care of infectious disease largely, we can turn our minds towards those other obsessions, social status and sexual attractiveness. So we spend a lot more time thinking about that and obsessing about those issues, social and sexual issues, than probably any other animals I've had the luxury of doing before in the history of life on Earth. Most of our ornaments are mental and behavioral, and that's mostly what we're showing off in courtship. We don't really flash huge tails like peacocks. We don't use that much sexual coercion compared to other species. So we're relatively peaceful, we're relatively naked, and we do most of our courtship through language. And showing off our brain capacities, like our intelligence, personality, moral virtues, burning the calories in your brain to produce a good sense of humor, or to sing well, or to produce interesting art, or to show off your creativity in any of the natural human ways that we've evolved to do. In modern consumerist culture, all of that effort, all of that status-seeking effort, all of the mating effort is now channeled into the economy. It's channeled into the goods and services that we buy. So the principal way you're supposed to display your mental traits now is through your purchases. The economy tries to capture all of our mating effort into these goods and services and turn them into our props for mating.
Products have therefore become a means of promoting ourselves beyond the talking. We use them as a signal. The foundations for this behaviour were laid down hundreds of thousands of years ago as we evolved a cultural trait called prestige.
The big difference between humans and other animals in terms of rankings and social status is that they don't have what I'm going to define as prestige. They have social status rankings, some are higher status than others, but all of that status, the relative positioning of one to another, is determined by dominance behaviors. So violence, threat of violence, coercion. Only humans have what I'm going to call prestige, and that is respect or authority or social power that is freely granted from one individual to another. Natural selection over time has shaped our psychologies and our behaviors in such a way that we both desire prestige and act in ways to try and acquire it.
There is one more important factor to consider. Because the brain's capacity has evolved to be the most crucial component in the survival and development of the human species, it has an inbuilt predisposition for growth. We are naturally driven to stimulate it. It is why we feel boredom so acutely, why we are so mentally restless. Our huge brain capacity is what makes us unique among animals, and in its simplest form, consumption is nourishment. And so brain food is part of our daily diet. We're the only species that changes where we live to suit us, and when we have a good idea, it spreads.
It's a what?
It's a swing wing.
Get Swing Wing, made by Transogram, where the fun comes from. It's a swing wing.
It's a what?
If we now look at modern society, we can see how capitalism not only reflects our evolutionary tendencies, but also amplifies and distorts it. Marketing is like the air we breathe. It's all around us. Marketing gurus have learned how to push our evolutionary buttons. They know status is a psychological pressure point, as is our need to promote our intelligence, creativity, and emotional stability. It means that by 20, the average Westerner has seen 1 million commercial messages, and budgets for advertising for kids has risen to over $1 billion. We are now indoctrinated to consume from birth. Modern sales techniques were born at the front end of the 20th century. Sigmund Freud's nephew, Edward Bernays, was living in America, and after success working as an agent, he was put in charge of propaganda as America entered the Great War in 1916. He was so successful that when peace came, he believed that if people's opinions could be moulded at a time of war, then why not while at peace? He coined the phrase public relations and set about getting people to buy stuff. Fundamental in his approach was the use of aspirational marketing. At the request of corporations, worried that people would stop buying once they had everything for a comfortable life, Bernays set about making consumerism the way we show both our success and our personality.
Corporations, especially in the mid-20th century, were actively looking at the way they could trigger off psychological impulses deep within us that would cause us to desire new products that we had never ever thought of desiring before. So in that respect, it's pushed upon us. But it's only possible to do that because, as Microsoft would put it, there are security vulnerabilities within us.
The 1950s saw consumerism come of age, a golden era where scientists, inventors, designers, and corporations competed to meet the desires of the ever-hungry people. Marketing culture was everywhere, and with the dominance of Hollywood films and the invention of television, it wasn't long before the rest of the world got to witness how comfortable the other half lived.
See it? Isn't it beautiful?
Car like that, I'd really be popular. Everybody would want to be friends with me then.
One critical thing that advertising does is it tries to convince consumers that above average products can compensate for below average traits.
Shirt right, tie right, and coat right. You can't be popular unless you know how to dress.
So that if you're not that funny, you're not that verbally creative, you're not artistic, you don't have any of the romantic skills that are naturally attractive, you can compensate, don't worry. You can get the engineering degree, make a respectable living, buy a bunch of stuff, and still be viable and attractive on the mating market. I think that's a delusion. It doesn't actually work. You might attract a spouse for a while, but they'll get bored with you, and they'll leave you, and they'll divorce you, and they'll go looking for somebody else who's more interesting. So what's happening now is consumers are neglecting to develop the crucial, romantically attractive traits. Saying, I've got a Porsche out front, it might interest people of the opposite sex at a kind of superficial level, but it doesn't really pack the emotional punch that leads people to fall in love with you as a person.
Psychology research supports this argument. It has found that in studying marketing for music, while we are sold the idea it is cool to listen to certain bands, being a mediocre singer or musician is a lot more romantically attractive.
Leaving, going home.
I mean, the advertising is trying to insinuate itself into the kids and the teenagers and the youthful consumers. at an ever younger age. And it's realized, for example, that if you sexualize young teens, if you make them think about mating earlier and earlier, you can capture more of their money or more of their parents' money.
I don't know.
I mean, a brand as a family or as a collective is a wonderful thing. You get to assign membership to a group that has a certain value set and an image and profile that you kind of like the feel of. But at the same time, you get to be an individual within that group. But what's also interesting, you know, if everything costs about the same, the brand is kind of everything.
I think the marketing revolution is convincing every consumer that you've got to be the center of your own world. You've got to be an ardent narcissist. As people withdraw into themselves and devote all their effort into social status and attracting mates, in the process of that, they often kind of forget to reproduce at all. They lose the Darwinian plot.
Well, she still holds me in her arms.
I think to a certain extent our, if you will, our evolved predispositions to seek status, to desire prestige, are operating in a context now that is very, very different from the one in which they originally evolved.
We talk about the man-made and what we think of is motorways and buildings and Phillips screws, but actually the man-made is also the meanings and values and systems and social structures that come with all of that. When you look into an electronics store and you look at black, shiny digital gadgets, which are aimed at a particular person who's looking to wear that superhero costume and become the organized busy person. That's what that prop is. It's not a product, it's a prop. That's what that is for. It's a way for you to self-actualize and fulfill that need. Feeling like you're part of the iPod generation is also a kind of shelter, because by acquiring the product and putting the headphones in and walking the street in that way, you become part of a group and you're safe now, grounded within something that's perhaps real.
Here's the biggest TV advertising campaign ever seen in the history of the stocking business. We're going to sell stockings of Agilon yarn to millions and millions of women from coast to coast through repetitive selling and exciting TV commercials. Here's a preview.
It's new, and true for you.
We have become lost in this modern landscape, living to consume. Consumerism isn't a conspiracy. It is very much a reflection of the human mind, and this is why we find it so comforting.
When you've got an emptiness inside you that is basically insatiable because you've never dealt with the real cause of that emptiness, and as with any addiction, you keep on stuffing that emptiness full of stuff that can't satisfy.
You know, the IKEA truck kind of drives away and you realize that, well, you're still the same person. You've just got all this stuff now. And I think that maybe it's that kind of realization that what you thought was going to happen hasn't happened, in which sense we're barking up the wrong tree if we're looking for meaning and satisfaction through material consumption.
I think marketing has very little effect on the fundamental parts of human nature. It's not really changing the structure of the brain or the nature of human intelligence or personality. But marketing's having a huge effect on the way people think about themselves, on the kinds of display strategies that they learn and that they invest in. And in that sense, it's very, very powerful. I think marketing is really at the heart of modern 21st century culture.
consumerism with another example of virtual reality. And the problem was so much of where we're at just now is that we've allowed virtual reality to become more than just a game.
The environmental effects of unfettered consumption are well documented. But if we are to lead our children to a more hopeful future, we need to understand how psychologically we have become untouched by destructiveness.
I think that we become dissociated from the world when we move out of relationship with hands-on experience of elemental reality, of fire, air, earth, and water. And when everything gets served up to us on a plate, because we've got a highly mechanized, computerized, globalized supply system in which we have lost touch with where things are coming from in the natural living world. And as a result of that losing touch, we're no longer able to care so much because we just don't feel it the same way.
And there, let's pause our screening of the documentary Consumed. We ended with the words of Professor Alastair MacIntosh, who sounds very much like William Wordsworth in his sonnet of 1807, "The World Is Too Much With Us." Both are saying, we are so caught up in the world of manufactured products, we have lost something very important. We have lost the spiritual connection between ourselves and the natural world. And they're right. Thanks to Robin Upton and the radio show Unwelcome Guests for acquainting me with the film Consumed. And we'll have more of it next week. And thank you for listening to New World Notes. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust, advising illegitimi non carborundum and reminding you that the percentage you're paying is too high a price for living beyond all your means. And the man in the suit has just bought a new car with the profit he's made on your dreams. And if I were more clever, I'd turn that into a song. Ciao.